This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Right, Parshas Vo'era. So, three very interesting ideas to share together this evening. The first one is a kliyoka in this week's Parsha. The beginning of the Parsha, before we get into the seven of the ten makas in this week's Edra, you have listings of the Bnei Yisrael. And the famous pasuk, Hu Aaron and Moshe, this is Aaron and Moshe Hashem, and it lists their genealogy, and then it comes to Aaron and Moshe. It says, Hu Aaron and Moshe Hashem, Hashem Lohem, Hoitzis Bnei Yisrael, Meretz Yisrael, Al Tzivoyso. And Rashi says, interesting, Aaron comes before Moshe. So says Rashi, first box, the second line, if you're listening online, please email me at j.kolker@gmail.com, I'll send you the handout. Yesh Mekomos, Shemakdim Aaron and Moshe, sometimes Aaron comes before Moshe. V'yesh Mekomos, Shemakdim Moshe l'Aaron, and sometimes Moshe comes in front of Aaron, lo malachot, to teach you sheshekulin ke'echot, that Moshe and Aaron are equal. Now in previous years, we've discussed that how can they be equal? There's a famous Ramesh Feinstein on this. We've done that in a previous year. But this Kliyoka has a slightly different take on it. It's a very interesting idea. Take a look at the next box. There's the Kliyoka. Hu Aaron and Moshe? Hu Moshe and Aaron? It splits, it alternates. Lifi Shebe'ika Hashlichus, when it came to the actual mission, Nire Ki Moshe Ha'ika, Moshe Rabbeinu was the primary player, Shehari Elov Levad Nire Hashem Besneh, because ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare. V'hoyisi oimen, I would have said, she'aron tofel elof, that Aaron is very subordinate when it comes to the actual mission to go in and to save Klal Yisrael and to take them out of Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu is number one, and Aaron is a sort of a peripheral number two. Talmud loima, hu Aaron and Moshe asher oma Hashem lohem hoitzias bnei Yisrael. When, in what context does it say Aaron and Moshe? In the context of Hitziu es bnei Yisrael, meretz Mitzrayim. Lo melachos is the kliyoka to teach us. Sheyesh chelek la'aron b'hitzah. There is a role for Aaron Hakohen in the taking out of the Jewish people. K'moy leMoshe, like there is with Moshe. Al kein hipdim es Aaron. They're equal partners in what you thought Aaron was the subordinate role and Moshe Rabbeinu was the primary role. Next paragraph. Avo b'inyan hadibur, when it comes to the speaking, that was Aaron HaKohen's primary role. El paro nira ki Aaron ikka. Again, you would assume that Aaron HaKohen is the ikka. Or Moshe noifalai, and Moshe Rabbeinu is sort of subordinate to him. Shari Moshe ha kvad pev of a kvad loshen. He had a speech impediment. He didn't speak well. Al kain oma heim hamadabrim el paro melech Mitzrayim hu Moshe v'Aaron. In the context of speaking to Paro, it says Moshe and Aaron. Hiktim es Moshe lo melacha. Shafilu b'inyan hadibur el Paro ain't a tofel Aaron. He's not subordinate to Aaron. El shakulim heima b'chol davar. So you see something fascinating. You would have thought Moshe Rabbeinu, when it comes to the yitzir, the taking out of the Jewish people, he is primary and Aaron is secondary. Kamash menon Aaron or Moshe. It's in that order. They're equal partners. And when it comes to speaking to Paro, I would have thought Aaron is primary, Moshe Rabbeinu is secondary. The Torah reverses it to teach me they're equal partners in it. Now, just as a sort of a tangential aside, there's a lovely insight of Rav Huttner. We know Chassidus. Chassidus started by the Baal Shem Tov in the 1700s. What was the key sort of, if you describe Chassidus in one word, what word, like you play word association, knife, fork, simcha, right? Simcha is Chassidus. You have pictures, you know, of Hasidim dancing, of the singing, of the exuberance. Certainly, in its initial stages, that was simcha. Of when you think of the misnagdim, those who opposed Hasidus, you think of the Vilna Gaon. He was the, you know, started the whole misnagdim, that whole movement. One word, if you associate one play word association with the Vilna Gaon, the one word is Torah. Now, he was Kulei Torah. There's lots to say on this, but he was Kula Torah. You know, the Talmidim they testify that he slept, you know, he learned 22 out of 24 hours. He slept 2 out of 24, and in those 2 hours, he had them in half an hour increments, and his lips were still moving. He was, in, you know, they say that he was a Nitzaitz of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why, by the way, when he tried to go to Eretz Yisrael, he said goodbye to his family, and he wrote his Igeres Hagod, and he said goodbye to his mother, and to his wife, and to his kids. And 3 months later, he came back, and no one had was daring enough to actually ask the Vilna Gaon, why did you come back? What happened? And very cryptically, he just said min hashamayim ikvuhi or something. From the, in Shemayim, they stopped me. No one understood why, what. He had said goodbye. He was planning on going. I think he got as far as Germany, maybe. I forget exactly how far he got. But some say, the Talmidim explained, he was a nitzot of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to go into the land, and he was prevented from going, whatever it may be. But Moshe Rabbeinu, but the Vilna Gaon, you associate with Torah, and the Baal Shem Tov, you associate with Simcha. That was the whole concept of Chassidus. What's fascinating, Rav Huttner pointed out, is look at their yahrzeits. The Baal Shem Tov died on Shavuos, and the Vilna Gaon died on Yud Ches Tishri on Sukkos. Sukkos is Man Simchaseinu, Shavuos is Man Matan Torahseinu. So, Baal Shem Tov had Torah, the Gaon had Simcha. So there is that, so it's Aaron, Moshe Aaron, they both were equal partners, as it were, in this project. Okay, let's move on. The second idea. Now, this is a fabulous idea. I saw it in the Emmanuel Bernstein Sefer. I looked in, he referred you to a Me'in Beis HaShoeva. This is the beautiful Sefer of Shimon Schwab. Very, very interesting idea. There is an Ibn Ezra in this week's parasha, which is very, very, very interesting. We know that there are 10 makas. If I were to ask you, the first three makas, Dam, Sfadeya, Kinim, or indeed any of the makas, did any of the makas affect Klal Yisrael? I think you would say that apart from Choshech, apart from the makah of Choshech, where Klal Yisrael, that was just a pretext to kill four-fifths of Klal Yisrael, but it wasn't as if they were smitten by the makas. It was, yeah. But I would have said that actually, no, they affected the Mitzrayim and they didn't affect Klal Yisrael. But take a look at this. The Pasuk says in Parshas Va'eiro and Perek Ches, V'hifleisi b'yoyim hahu etz eretz Goshen, I will set aside on this day the land of Goshen, asher imi oimed, sorry, ami oimed oleha, where my people are standing, where they're living, levilti hiyeos shom orev. They're not going to have any orev. This fourth makkah of wild animals, they're not going to have orev there. V'samti pudus bein ami uvein amecha. I'm going to make a distinction between my people and your people. Why now? All of a sudden we're told that the fourth makkah is not going to affect Klal Yisrael. Says the Ibn Ezra on this, it's actually on the previous perek, on perek Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Well, if he died, listen to this. Ki makas hadam v'atzvardim v'akinim, hoiso keleles hamitzrim v'ivrim. The first three makas affected not only the Mitzrim, but even the Ivrim, even the Jewish people. The Eila hasholosh ma'at hiziku, and to some extent these three affected Klal Yisrael. Rak, makas ha'orev, the fourth one. Shehoiso kosher, which is more difficult than the first three. Hashem hifrish bein hamitzrim of Yisrael. So astonishing. That sort of blows a whole primary school childhood concept that the makas, you know, we went out to get the dam and it didn't affect us and it affected them. All the songs, all the stories, gone. That's what Ibn Ezra says. Says the Radvaz. Now the Radvaz, there's the Ridvaz, the Radvaz. Here this is the Shalish and Shuvas. This is the 1500s. He was born in the 1480s. He was, I think, 13 years old at the time of the Spanish expulsion in 1492, so maybe 1479. And that was his bar mitzvah, right, in the 1492, and he was living in that time. He wrote a famous commentary on the Rambam, and he also has got many, many shayas and shuvas, thousands, literally. And he says, Umashekosov Ibn Ezra, ki makas hadam v'atzvardim v'akinim hoyele mitzrim ul Yisrael, that which he says, that the first three makas affected the Mitzrim and Klal Yisrael, osa lahamin dovo zeh. It's forbidden to believe it. So he doesn't, he criticizes him very strongly. It's osa lahamin zeh. Kol shekein, shaksuvim meirim hepach. The psukim themselves tell me the opposite of that. Look at that. V'lo yochlu mitzrim lishlois mayim min ha'er. It says in the Pasuk, the Mitzrayim couldn't drink the water, the blood. V'yachbru kom Mitzrayim sivas ha'yar, as a result of the makkah of Dam, the Mitzrayim, they were the ones who sort of dug canals next to the river in the hope they would get some water. The Mitzrayim, not the Jewish people. Mashma, avul Yisrael lo hayitzrichin hazeh, ki hoyu shoysim imeim ha'yar, they could drink normally. Uv'tzvardim k'siv, uv'chol v'amecho. you and your people. He's talking to Paro, which implies your people, not my people. Again, your people. How can the Ibn Ezra say that? And hakinim, and it doesn't say I can't bring you a pasuk for the kinim, but just like the first two, it was applying only to the Mitzrayim, not to the Klal Yisrael. Well, so to the third one as well. Now, moreover, you can add to the proofs of the Radvaz from a Mishnah in Ovis according to the Pirush of the Rambam. The Mishnah in Ovis says in the fifth parak, Asara nisim nasu lavaseinu b'Mitzrayim. There were 10 miracles that happened to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Says the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayis, V'omnam ha'asara nisim asher na'asu lavaseinu b'Mitzrayim, harihem ha'nitzlam me'ese ha'makas. You know what they were? They were being spared from the 10 makas. Those are the 10 miracles that happened to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. V'heyois kol maka u'makam yuchedes Mitzrayim lo b'Yisrael. So you see clearly that Rambam is of the opinion that all 10 of the makas only applied to the Mitzrayim and not to Klal Yisrael. Now, I haven't looked at it to be honest, but there is, he does bring the Lubavitcher Rebbe has in his Likutei Sichas, which are his famous drashas, he used to give the famous drashas for years. There's volumes and volumes and volumes of them. I remember Isaac Bernstein used to say that each one is like a PhD. Right? He was a big fan. I'm not very familiar with them, but he gives a Maramokum where the Lubavitcher Rebbe defends the Ibn Ezra, explains the Ibn Ezra, whatever that may be. But either way, the Mefarshim are very critical of this Ibn Ezra. How can it be that the first three affect the Klal Yisrael as well? Now, the question, however, remains, the Ibn Ezra's proof is a good proof, because he does say that now, that only is said in the fourth Makkah. Now I'll make a distinction, which suggests that until now there was no distinction. How do you explain that if you're going to go down the line, like most do, that all 10 Makkahs applied to the Mitzrayim and to Klal Yisrael? How do you explain the Pesukim that this distinction takes place in the Makkah of in the fourth Makkah? So Rav Shimon Schwab in Me'ein Beis HaShoeva, which now I think has been translated into English, he says something very, very interesting. He says it doesn't distinguish between the Mitzrayim and the Jews and Klal Yisrael, but it's distinguishing between two locations. In other words, in the first three of the Makkahs, the Mitzrayim were affected wherever they were, and Klal Yisrael were affected, they were spared wherever they were. But when it came to the fourth Makkah, there was like a new development, and Goshen is going to be plague-free for whoever was there. In other words, if an Egyptian found himself in the land of Goshen for the fourth Makkah, he's okay. He's not going to be affected by the Makkah of Orav, of wild animals. So again, so Shimon Schwab says the distinction, yeah? In other words, let's see the wording of this Shimon Schwab inside. What it means is, your people in your land Goshen, it's safe, it's like home. And therefore, anyone in your people means in that place, anyone in that place is going to be safe. So, and let's see that box before it says number three. The Pasuk says, when it actually happened, the whole land was destroyed because of the wild beasts. Says Rav Shimon Schwab, a beautiful interpretation of this dialogue. Fits in very well. Now, says Rav Shimon Schwab, I can understand this sort of dialogue or this debate, this argument between Moshe and Paro. Paro called Moshe and Aaron when it came to the Makkah of Orav, and he was riddled with animals throughout his country. And he said to him, "Lechu zivchu lekechem ba'aretz. Go and serve your God in your land." Okay, no, it's not right to do this. Kitavas Mitzrayim. This is an abomination, etc., etc. What does that mean? Shekiven shenitzlu gam haMitzrayim imakas haOrav. Since the Mitzrayim were spared from the Makkah of Orav, whoever found himself in Goshen for this fourth plague, they were saved. Because this is like a safe place. This is home. You know, when you're playing it, this is home. You can't touch me over here. Omar Paroi, Paro said, Hari nivcha mokum yuchud bishvil Yisrael. So this is like your home. This is a designated safe place. So then why do you need to go to Eretz Yisrael? Offer up your karbonos over here. That's what he was saying to them. For here it's Goshen. V'yesh lochem mokum zevach l'chu zivchur l'lokechem ba'aretz. You don't need to leave my country. Stay in Goshen. You've got a safe place, which is your land here in Goshen. Who needs to leave anywhere? V'ono lohem Moshe, no. She Goshen hu mokum megurim gam yuz Mitzrayim, because there were Mitzrayim living in that area. V'hein nizbach es tovas Mitzrayim le'neim v'lo yizkulunu. We can't do it. It's a toeva. They might stone us. It's dangerous because it's their gods, etc., etc. So, a very interesting thing emerges from all of this. Number one, the concept that Ibn Ezra says that the first three makkas affected the Klal Yisrael, which was, I think, is a chiddush to many. The criticism of the Radvaz and the proofs of the Rambam in Pirush Mishnayos on the Asor Nisim Nasla Vasein Mitzrayim, and the explanation of what takad means in the pasuk. What does it mean? That the pasuk says, v'heflesi b'yom ahud, there's going to be a distinction, v'samti pedus bein ami uvein amecho. So Shimon Schwab explains what it means is the first three makkas, then there was no, it would affect people wherever they were. But when it came to the fourth makkah, if a Mitzri happened to be in Goshen, he would be spared. I guess they didn't know about it, they couldn't get there, the animals are going to attack them on the way. I guess it wasn't so straightforward.
But so the, just for them, from their
knowledge. It's not clear, I don't know. I'm not sure if the Shimon Schwab, I don't think he explains whether it applies to all of the subsequent ones. But they're in groups. It could be the next group of three, but I'm not entirely sure. Yeah.
Did we never ask to give any details of just the pasuk is what makes him think it's that?
Yeah, it's largely the pasuk. But again, it's the pasuk in the previous perek, in perek Zion. Where is it? Perek Zion, pasuk Chaftalet. Yeah.
He doesn't say what's was effectively evil as well.
No, he says, Vela Hasholosh Ma'at Hiziku. Doesn't say they were exposed to the same level of Mitzrayim, but they were to some extent. Which is a very interesting chiddush. Okay, let's press on. Now, in a previous year, I mentioned the first half of what I'm going to tell you now, but I want to add something to it, which I think is fascinating. We're very familiar with this Rashi. Rashi, the pasuk says later on, "Vayom Hashem and Moshe lechel Paro, go to speak to Paro. What time and where?" Says the pasuk, "Baboike, go early in the morning." He's going to go out to the water when it's after Likrosoi Asfas Hayar. You go meet Paro early in the morning and he'll be by the river Nile. Now, what was he doing by the river Nile early in the morning? Says Rashi, in the cave off, he was going to the bathroom, he was going to relieve himself. Why? He made himself into some sort of deity. In the cave of, he doesn't need the bathroom. And he would therefore get up early in the morning and go to the Nile. Right. So we're very familiar with this, a well-known Rashi. But as ever, you've got to try and just think about it for a second. Think about what Paro did to himself. He puts himself through torture for a little bit of kavod. He was the supreme power of the day. He was the king of Egypt, which is 100 times more powerful than any king, prime minister, or president today. And yet, that wasn't enough. He wanted to be treated as a deity. How do you get treated as a deity? You pretend you don't need the bathroom. But he's a human being. So therefore, he had to sneak out of the palace at 3, 4 in the morning, go out to the Nile, when everyone, the whole world was sleeping. He would sneak out, use the bathroom, relieve himself, and that was it for the day. So he would go back home, maybe sleep for another few hours, and then he, you know, as the day progressed, he is in pain, he needs the bathroom, but he can't go out. He's got to wait for the next morning. So he put himself through this daily torture for what? What practical advantage did he have that he was now deemed to be a deity that he didn't have, you know, as king of Egypt? The Teretz is, that's what kavod does to a person. Yeah, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Rebbe Elazar Kaparoimen in Perek Dalet, Hakina v'ataiva v'akavod mitzinis adam min ha'olam. For these three vices, kinna, taiva, and kovod, it can bring a person out of the world. Says the Tiferes Yisrael, doesn't only mean olam haba. A person is caught up in kinna, taiva, and kovod, it means from this world as well. Me olam hazeh, v'um olam haba. Means both worlds. So kinna, a person is jealous. It can ruin not just olam haba, but it can ruin your life in this world. You're just consumed with jealousy. A person is consumed with taiva, certain desires, and create. So he can ruin everything for some taiva. It's nuts. It's crazy. It's totally illogical. And kavod, we just saw a person can, the pirate can put himself through all of this and many, many other examples. But I came across another example of his pursuit of kavod, which I hadn't really thought about before. Look at this. Look at the penultimate box of the page. Vayikra Paro Lemoshe La'aron. This is at the end of the Makkah of Tzfardeya, the second plague. Vayoyme Hatir Lashem. He couldn't take it anymore. And he said, listen, pray to your God. Vayoseh Hasfardim Mimenu Me'ami. And let him take away the frogs Mimeni Ume'ami from me and from my people. Vashalcha Esa'am. And then I'll let the people go. Vizbuch Lashem. Vayoyme Moshe La'aro. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro, okay, when would you like them to go? When would you like them to go? Says Paro, Vayome, Lemocha, tomorrow. Vayome, and so Moshe Rabbeinu said, Kidvorecha, fine, tomorrow. What? He is plagued by frogs. Now again, we need to just step into that world. It's impossible. In your home, in your beds, in your ovens, in your everywhere, frogs. Their lives have been turned upside down and made impossible. He eventually, you know, he eats his humble pie. He goes to Paro, he goes to Moshe Rabbeinu. We need to get rid of them. When to get rid of them? Now. But tomorrow? That means I've got another 24 hours of this? Another sleepless night? Why is he saying the Macha? So interesting, Ibn Ezra again. Says the Ibn Ezra, the last box there, the last paragraph of the second box, Vayyom el-Machar, Omer Rav Shmuel ben Chafni, a normal human being would say, just take it away now. The Ibn Ezra says that Paro thought that through, you know, some astrological, natural means, that's how it really happened. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that it was some form of natural phenomenon that brought about the Sfaradim. And presumably now is the time when the Sfaradim are going to be removed as well through some wind or volcano, who knows what. So to test him, when the natural phenomenon would remove it now, he wanted to say, you can't do it, because I'll ask you for tomorrow. So Ibn Ezra is wary of this problem, and therefore that's his explanation. In other words, maybe they came through some sorts of natural phenomenon, and they'll be removed through some natural phenomenon, and therefore we're talking about it now, and presumably it's today. I'll show you that you're wrong. Tomorrow, please.
He did that again to
Paro. Right.
Because
so,
did he ask immediately?
Yeah, okay, interesting. Yeah, so maybe this, again, this he was still playing this game. But again, what you see is the his pursuit of honor is so overriding and overwhelming that it just ruins the guy's logic and thinking, and it ruins his life in this world. So another example of Akina Vataiva Kovad Motsienes Odon Min Ha'ilom. Okay, one final thing. When it comes to the Makkah of Kinim, the Pasuk says, Vayomra Chartumim El Paro Etzpa Elokimhi. It's the finger of God. What does that mean? That they saw so clearly the Hashkocha Protest, the Yad Hashem, that it could be nothing other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu's divine intervention. So let me just tell you an interesting story I saw there's a lovely sefer called Torah Tavlin. I only recently got hold of it, so I was just flicking through and I just saw this very, very interesting story, which he brings on this pasuk of Etzpa Elokim. Sometimes you see something, you think, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. So he tells the story of a young lady. She's been in Shidduchim for a number of years and it's not working. It's not going. And she's having a tough time. And the tough time gets even harder because she's dating, she gets, you know, a suggestion on paper looks fantastic. This is on paper, this is really the you know, Prince Charming. And when it goes to the other side, for some reason, it comes back as a no. And that really destroys her. Really, it's very difficult for her. And she's, and her friends say, you know what, take a, go to Eretz Yisrael for a couple of weeks. Have a holiday. So she goes, you know, it's a good idea. So she gets on a plane. And she's sitting on the plane. And you know what it's like when the stewardess comes around to give out the meals, the kosher meals come first. So she says her name, here, your kosher meal. Fine, she's sitting there, the meal's sitting on a tray in front of her. And she sees a couple of rows in front, the air stewardess looks at the piece of paper and she realizes there's a problem. because there's a fellow who's ordered a kosher meal, but they've run out of kosher meals. So this air stewardess is apologizing to the guy, who's a young yeshiva bocher, who's sitting a few rows ahead, and says, "I'm so sorry that, you know, so I know you're on the list, but we just haven't got any." So she overhears it, this girl. And as the air stewardess is walking back, she goes, "Look, I overheard your conversation. I'm not that hungry. I'm happy for you to take this meal and give it to the guy. He's, you know, to give it to him in the rows in front." "Sure?" "More than sure." "Fine." So she takes the meal. "Thank you very much." She's very appreciative. She takes the meal and she gives it to the guy in front. And here, Mr. I think it was Levinson. "Mr. Levinson, this is your meal. So thank you very much." You know, later in the flight, this guy walks back a row or two, and he says that the air stewardess told me that you were the one who gave me the meal. I just wanted to come and thank you. I really appreciate that. My name is, well, I think it's Eli Levinson. So she says, "A pleasure." "Fine, it's very kind of you." He said to her, he says, "One second, what's your name?" "Levinson." He says, "Do you mind if I ask you a personal question? Are you so-and-so?" And she identified him. And sure enough, this is the guy who said no. So she said, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. So she said to him, "I need to ask you a question. Yeah, my name is so-and-so. I was suggested as a shidduch for you. And you said no. Why did you say no?" Yeah. So he, you know, turned various colors. And he then looked at her and said, "We did our research, and I'll tell you what it was. We were told that you went to a certain seminary that we were told is very academic, and they focus on text learning and not on chesed. I'm looking for a balas chesed." And then the penny drops. Here's a girl who gave away her own food to feed this guy. And he looks and he says, "I guess I was wrong." And they're now happily married today. So you see a remarkable story, I think, etzpa lukimi. Sometimes you point, you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Seder, we'll leave it there.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.